The following program originally aired at an earlier time. Enjoy.
This is essential. That makes all the difference. All the difference. I like the smell of something cooking. Makes me feel it. Bring on the roasted potatoes. Bring on the borscht. This is what good cooking is all about. This is what good cooking is all about.
Hi, I'm Ann Maxfield, and you're listening to the Accidental Locavore Live. We're on WPWL, Pauling Public Radio, 103.7 FM, or paulingpublicradio.org if you'd like to live stream us. If you're a jam lover, we've got a program today that you're going to love. Welcome Christopher Wilson of Luna Grown Jam. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Ann. Thank you for the invitation. It's great to be on with you.
Oh, well, it's great. It's great to have you. And it was great having your jam, too. They're beautiful. The packaging is beautiful, and the jam is delicious.
Thank you.
Besides the jam, which we'll get to in a sec, you're also an author. And in the intro to your book, it said that you got started as a visual merchandiser. Now, from my many, many years in the fashion industry, I know what a visual merchandiser is, but people out listening might not know. So can you tell us what a visual merchandiser is and how did you go from that to making jam?
Visual merchandising, if we go back to when I was in it, people would know that best as window displays. The movie Mannequin back in the 80s, that was where I started, the type of work I did. And I started actually with a florist, and we did interior design work for malls. So we would set them up for the holidays. And from there, I transferred to some of the larger department stores, flank stores, and then on to some private work out of that. It was a lot of fun. It was a great industry at that time, and today it's more of a streamlined industry. There's less creativity for installs, I should say.
Yeah, it's a lot of floor plans and, you know, planograms and things like that. You know, they just...
But the takeaway from that is it gives you a great eye if you need to market your own products. So it's helped me a great deal to have that, some time in that background.
Yeah, because your packaging and everything was really beautiful. You know, one of the sad parts, well, it's not sad, but one of the hard parts about being on the radio is that I'm so very visual, and a lot of the stuff that I work with and a lot of the people that I have on have products that just look really good and taste really good. So it's sort of hard, but your packaging is really beautiful, even the shipping boxes, and the whole thing looks very well thought out. So how did you go from the visual merchandising to making jam?
Well, it's kind of a long way around, but I did visual merchandising for the most part during the days. And in the evenings, I worked in the bar industry. I worked in a nightclub. And when I left the visual field, I stuck with the bar business and expanded into the restaurant business from the front end to the back end to the bartending and cooking and the whole thing that goes with the restaurant industry. So when in the Hudson Valley years ago, when things started to close down, your local eateries started to fade away, and they did at one point. Thankfully, they're coming back. But I left that industry, and I said, "What am I going to do with myself?" And for the fun of it, I started making jam in my spare time, and people started to request it. So it turned from just a little kind of a spare time thing into a full-time job, into a business.
And what did you start out with? Did you just...
I started out with strawberry and blueberry jam.
And now you have a bunch of flavors, right?
Luna Grown is seasonal, meaning each season we change what we offer. Because you can't, from our perspective, I don't want to offer something that isn't in season. The lucky thing with Luna Grown is the Hudson Valley has some really incredible growers here. We grow what we can, but we also source from other farmers. So when we're using peaches, they're the freshest you can get. It's not the frozen stuff that some people use in the winter. It's fresh. Our strawberries, they come local. So when it's strawberry season, this is what we create, and we create as much of it as possible. But, yeah, we change with each season, except for we have three that we do year-round, and that is the lemon marmalade, the fig, which I sent you, and a chipotle pepper.
Oh, I bet that's good.
It's very nice. we do those year-round because when we had first started, and I said, okay, everything's going to be seasonal, I actually got some unkind emails about why wasn't the product available year-round. So I said, well, there's a few, then we'll make year-round.
So you do small batch, but how do you take advantage of, say, strawberry season, which is pretty fleeting, or it seemed this year it was very, very fleeting?
Well, strawberry season, depending on the weather, will have two harvests. So we get an early harvest, and we should have a harvest late August into September, October, depending on the plant and depending on the weather. If we get a good crop early on, I get as much as I can so that we can produce, you know, what is necessary. And then I'll freeze some if it's possible. It's not always possible. And if that means that the availability of the product runs short, then so be it. I would rather have customers enjoy a higher quality product that we just happen to run out of early. You know, you can wait till next year. You can look forward to getting that fresh again, rather than having something that's going to sit on a shelf or get overlooked. I'd rather run short, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense to me. I mean, you know, it's why I live for this time of year when you have, you know, everything fresh. The tomato, you know, we just got our first fresh tomatoes from the farm last week because they actually have a hothouse that they grow most of their tomatoes in. So we were lucky enough to have tomatoes as of last week. And I was thinking on my way over here that we got, as part of our CSA share, we got 2 pounds of tomatoes, and they are gone except for one tomato, which is going to be gone as of tonight mm-hmm. when I get home. But, you know, it makes you look forward to it. I think it makes you treasure the taste more.
Well, it's interesting. When you look at American markets, and I found this really, really interesting, when you look at the world and the way things are sold, in Japan, you can't get the same items all the time. Where here, we go to a supermarket and it's there all the time, the same. You know, if you want it, it's there for you. That's not how it is in every country. And so in Japan, this is what you get, and when they're out, they're out. And the consumers can't wait to get the product then. So you're building customer loyalty because they want that. It's a really quite an amazing cultural difference.
So how did you, so how did the jams become part of your life? You know, it's not something that I think people easily gravitate towards. How did you grow up? Did your family make jams? Did your mom or grandma or somebody make jams? What got you started?
Originally, my family's from Missouri, very, very small town. And we would go back home to our grandparents, of course. And back then, back in the 60s and 70s, it was the biggest thrill to go out in the gardens and pick berries all day long, to pick strawberries. And you'd sit on the porch with grandma and grandpa, and you'd clean the berries, and then they would get prepared and cooked or frozen. But it was a process, and it was a pretty neat thing to learn as a kid. It was magic. And then, of course, there were special ones. So my brother and I would race, actually, to the cupboard when we'd get to Grandma and Grandpa's house to pick the first jam that got open for the summer season. It was a big thrill.
Well, yeah, this stuff is great. You know, good jam is really, really good. I've always been lucky because my cousin makes jam, and that's her Christmas present every year for everybody. And she makes some pretty good jam. So we always look forward to that. And she'll call us in the summer and say, "Okay, what do you guys really want this year?" And we're always
Which is a beautiful thing. That's so wonderful. You know, because it pulls a family together, it automatically creates a memory.
It absolutely does.
So whenever you have a jar of jam, whether it's hers or a homemade one or it's a holidays, you're going to remember her. So it really is a wonderful gift that she's passing on to you.
Absolutely. Well, I just have to take a quick break and say you're listening to the Accidental Locavore Live. We're on WPWL, Pauling Public Radio, 103.7 FM, paulingpublicradio.org, and we're broadcasting live from the Rush Studios in beautiful downtown Pauling, New York. And today we're talking jam with Luna Grown founder Christopher Wilson. So how did Luna Grown come to be?
Well, Luna Grown, I have partners, and they happen to purchase land, quite a bit of it, 50 acres, give or take. So anyway, they bought the land, and we went to hike the bare land with the dogs. We had Luna, and we had Ben. And we just let the dogs run on the property, and we couldn't find them after a while. So we searched and searched for the dogs on this property, and we found Luna and Benny sitting in a group, a clump of blueberries, pulling the berries off the bushes. And come to find out, we had 8 acres of wild blueberries, and that's pretty much where it started. How it became Luna, it's named after the dog, and that's what we started at with. The first product, licensed product, was blueberry jam.
And the blueberries are really good. It's funny because my dog likes blueberries, but I don't think you normally think of dogs eating blueberries, but mine is always happy when I throw them one or two when I'm making breakfast.
And they're healthy treats for the pups.
Yeah.
But that's how it started. And then, of course, we just went from there. At that point, we didn't have a kitchen, so it was a home-based business for the first year, and we started to build a kitchen on the land and work the soil and, you know, build the farm.
And what are you growing now at the farm?
Right now we have some table grapes because I don't do a lot of grape jam. It just, you know, Welch's does a good job at that, so we'll let them have it. We have some grapes. We're growing apricots, elderberries, three different varieties of currants. We have some cherries, a couple crab apples. We're still fairly young as far as agriculture goes. Trees take a little while.
Yeah.
But that's that, you know, that in itself works. This way we can continue to outsource to local growers, and then helps the whole community. And it's nice to get to know other people that are growing. It really is great. And it's great for the consumers. I can say to somebody that's purchasing the product, oh, these peaches were grown at this farm. These berries came from here. And it's really nice because they can relate to, oh, that's near my house. So it's actually served Luna Grown very well, and we're very pleased.
And what I liked a lot about the jam, I had the blueberry and the fig, and I thought they were both really good, and I was very surprised because they weren't what I would consider to be too sweet. They had a lot of flavor, but it was flavor from the fruit more than flavor from fruit plus sugar.
Right. When I started this, I have family members that are type 2 diabetes or diabetic, excuse me. And the concern was, do I want to make the standard product and my family can't enjoy it? So that kind of defeats the purpose. So the goal was to find a way to make reduced sugar product. And it took some time, a lot of research, and, you know, that's what we do. We follow the FDA guidelines, which means we're at minimum 25% less sugar than what the market standard is. And it's actually a very interesting process, the whole sugar thing in products in America. The federal government, your standard jam that you'll buy in the supermarket, that's 55% sugar to 45% fruit.
Wow.
That's an amazing amount of sugar. It you know, even saying it for me blows my mind, but that's what the standard is. And that was set back in 1906 or something like that, and then it was changed and changed, but that is the standard in the country. So in order for us to be a low-sugar product, we change the pectin that we use, and when a recipe is developed, it has to be tested, and then it gets tested again by New York State, and it gets filed with the State Ag Department, and it gets filed with the FDA, so that, you know, everybody knows that this is a shelf-stable, healthy product that is what it says it is.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, because I was wondering if, when you reduce the sugar, if you have to make up for it with pectin or some pectin substitute, or since I know very little about making jam, I'm just the lucky recipient.
Traditionally, and I mean traditionally, like grandparents, or if you're a home processor and you know jam like they make in France, traditionally, pectin isn't added. You choose fruits that have natural pectin. And a lot of those fruits you don't find so much anymore. You can do it with apples. The apple skins are high in pectin. But pectin became normal in jelly and jam making just before World War I. That's when it was accepted. This way, the jams and jellies could be mass-produced, and they were used to take care of the troops and the Allies during the war. So that was a staple in their food packs.
And speaking of the war, I'm going to go flip to your book for a second, because one of the recipes I saw was for a cocktail using jam.
Yeah.
Because I'm flipping right now, but Omar
Bradley is what you're talking about.
Right, because he couldn't get fruit.
By that time, we're at World War II, I think. Was it World War I? Might have been. Anyway, he was a general, and he liked old fashions. That was his drink. But being out in the field, he couldn't get orange rinds. He didn't have oranges to muddle in his cocktail, so he would bring orange marmalade with him. And that's how he would have his cocktails out in the field.
Well, I think that's pretty ingenious.
It's pretty smart, and it's interesting how that all folds into history, into our food history. You know, who knew?
Yeah, I was really surprised, because I'm in the book now, that there were so many cocktails, and the cocktails were historic. You know, they went back to like the turn of the century, or, you know, post World War II. They're kind of all over the place, and I don't think of jam as being used in cocktails, although probably these days we put everything in cocktails. But there was such a history of jam being used in cocktails.
That began when Prohibition began. Prohibition began in America, and Europeans said, you know, in order to use fruit in our cocktails, we're going to use jam. We've got it. It's mass-produced. We can utilize this. And that's kind of where it all started, and then after the war, it all came back to America, and it was pretty neat. It's interesting. One of the biggest sellers for my product, we get hot days like today, is not to use it in a cocktail, but I tell folks all the time, if you have extra, even stuff that isn't Luna grown, on a hot day, put a tablespoon of that in your ice water. because then you're not getting your high sugar content. You're getting a little bit of fiber, and it tastes good.
Well, I'll have to try that with the blueberry. I'm not sure I'd like it with the fig so much, but the blueberry would be good.
Yeah, I don't know how that'd be with the fig, but yes, the blueberry would probably be pretty nice.
Yeah. Do you have any favorites?
My favorite jams?
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I've eaten and we're out of right now. my favorite at present is the raspberry, because we're just coming into processing season for raspberry. Although I did have a strawberry yesterday that was really nice on some on a cheese pastry. But it changes per season. So we get into the autumn, and I'm really looking forward to an apple jam. You know, full apples and that cinnamon and that nutmeg, and you get these nice, beautiful, fresh apples that are crisp. You know, you look forward to it. And then closer to the holiday time, I get the cranberry jam with the spices, and it's just so nice on a turkey sandwich. And so the favorites change every season.
Oh, that would be really good. I like the idea of a cranberry jam. It would be a nice change from, the cranberry in a can.
Cranberry sauce. Oh, yeah.
which I try to avoid anyway, but I usually end up making like a apricot and cranberry chutney.
But that's very nice.
Speaking of apricots, you said you had trees. Do you do an apricot jam? One of my always all-time favorites.
Yes. We do an apricot jam, and ours actually is done with orange zest.
Ooh.
So it's not the pure apricot. It's done with a little bit of orange zest. And I happen to like it in the morning because it's just that morning kind of wake up. It's just very, very nice.
And you do some marmalades too, and maybe tell people what the difference is between a jam and a marmalade.
I would love to. In fact, I just did an event recently with other jammers, and I could answer that question. So the difference between jam, jelly, marmalade, chutney, jam is the fruit with sugar, but it's pulverized. So you have pieces of the fruit, small pieces of the fruit suspended in the liquid. Jelly is basically, it's just the juice. So it's clear and it's juice with sugar, and that's what you get. Marmalade is made with the rinds of the fruit. So whether you're doing a citrus marmalade, a lemon or an orange marmalade, or an apricot marmalade, it contains the skin of the fruit. In an apricot marmalade, it would usually be whipped so that the skin would be pulverized in there. And they're great because they add additional fiber to your diet. It's just really nice. Preserves, rather than jam, preserves have full chunks of fruit. So if you get a raspberry, that you'll get that as a jam. It'll have the seeds and the pulp. But you can't get a raspberry preserve technically unless you can keep the berries kind of whole.
Good luck with that.
you get fine lines. Is the more the descriptions change, the more challenging the consistency. Chutneys are often fruits with onions and sometimes nuts. They're not necessarily all fruit. It might be fruit and vegetable, might be fruit and vegetable and nut. It's a whole different ball game, actually.
All right, well, before we run out of time, because we are just about out of time, tell people what the company is, where they can find it, online stores, and push your book a little bit.
We're Luna Grown Jam. You can find us online at lunagrown.com. We do have a full list of retailers in the Hudson Valley. We sold in the Hudson Valley, a couple places in New Jersey, and a few places in Pennsylvania. And most of these places are gourmet stores, olive oil, butchers, cheese shops, wineries. so you won't find this in the supermarket. And the book, at present, you can get the Kindle version on Amazon, and the print version directly from us at lunagrown.com.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest today. We've been talking with Christopher Wilson of Lunagrown Jams, and you've been listening to the Accidental Locavore Live on WPWL, broadcasting from the Rush Studios at 26 East Main Street in beautiful downtown Pawling, New York. Thank you.
Cook and keep on cooking. Everyone gather around the dinner table. Cook and keep on cooking. This is the way to live. Cook and keep on cooking. This is the way to eat. Bon appetit.